Chancellor Angela Merkel. Angie. Ange. It's been exactly a month now since I first met you at the St. Petersburg G8 Summit. I was the young and enthusiastic student journalist whose hand kept popping up to take your picture. You, of course, were the power-suited and charming German Chancellor, looking to make her final statement at the close of the G8 meeting. I had been watching you for a while, Angie. You see, one of the freelancing contracts I picked up for the summit was with a feminist magazine, and naturally, you were the obvious story. Not since Margaret Thatcher had a woman been present at the meeting of the leaders of the Group of Eight Industrialized Democracies. Not since, well, never before, has a woman held the title of Chancellor in Germany. You are making headlines already because you have a handbag instead of a European man's carryall. So, when the added spotlight of the G8 shone on you, everyone was waiting to see what your presence did to alter the dynamic of the boys' club that has been the G8. I was proud to be reporting on a traditionally and overwhelmingly male-dominated event for a feminist publication at such a promising and exciting time. I was pleased to put it in print, gender back on the agenda for the Group of Eight Nations. The institution of the G8 has been criticized for as long as I can remember as a do-not-much social gathering of the country's leaders. With your presence, many expected a modicum of change. The gender card had been on the table for me in regards to the whole G8 experience for a while. I was attending the summit as a journalist for the surprisingly renowned G8 Research Group, an analytical collective based out of U of T and headed up by John Curtin, the man who many agree is the top dog on G8 history, policy, and analysis. Under his lead, over 100 students compile reports between G8 summits, assessing the extent to which individual countries have complied or failed to comply to commitments made at previous G8 summits, and projecting deals that may or may not be made at the upcoming meeting of the countries. Of this large pool of students, a few are selected by Professor Curtin and the Executive Committee to be part of the team that travels with him to the summit to analyze and report on G8 news and agreements as they happen. Call me crazy or call it speculation, but it seemed to me that the summit team this year was put together with the gender issue in mind. Female summit team members, in fact, outnumbered male team members, although I seem to remember distinctly more stubbled faces at the general meetings of all 100 members than handbags. In other words, it may have been a total result of merit, but there was at least an inkling in my mind from the outset that the decision to overpopulate the team with female members was deliberate. The group saw a responsibility to acknowledge gender and to work it into the team's makeup. And this is where you come in, Angie. What I saw with your arrival at the conference was an opportunity to bring issues of gender back to the G8 agenda just by your very presence. A stark realization of the G8 nation's responsibility to take gender into consideration in the same way my research group did. What followed, though, was just a whole lot of the same old, same old. Agreements were made, photos were snapped, and all of the leaders, I'm sure, enjoyed far more elaborate and nutritious meals than the endless plates of sausage they pushed over to us in the media center. Aside from a few snide comments aimed at Dubya from host Vladimir Putin, it was a run-of-the-mill summit, where a lot was said, and all we can hope is that some of it will be done. It is true that the Israel-Lebanon conflict tended to overshadow even the most glaring of summit agenda items. This may have left little wiggle room in terms of diplomacy to introduce more peripheral matters such as the fact that you are a lady. I know there was nary a press conference that avoided comment on the situation in the Middle East, and of course this was necessary and appropriate. But regardless of the external situation, with your attendance at the summit, there was potential for an opening of a gender dialogue in the summit lead-up and summit wrap-up, which were both periods far more free from the Middle East constraints. And for whatever reason, that potential fell flat. It is this potential dialogue that I know is absolutely crucial to iconic G8 issues such as HIV commitments, and I'm not the only one.
If this were 5 years ago and I'd been given the privilege of delivering the Massey lectures, I might have adopted a more conciliatory tone. But 2005 is not 2000. In the interim, I've been emotionally torn asunder by the onslaught of AIDS, and it has profoundly changed my view of the world. My life is consumed by this plague. I can't deny it. It colors everything I believe and say. As I write these words, I have many African friends who are even now gasping for a few more days of life. My impatience with the United Nations and with Western and African governments stems in large part from their dilatory, often unconscionably dilatory, response to the pandemic. While it is true that I've been tough in places in these lectures, I don't believe I've gone overboard. Indeed, as measured against the human apocalypse, the reader may even conclude that I've been restrained.
Stephen Lewis, for one, has argued for a gender approach to HIV in his 2005 Massey lectures, Race Against Time. In the Halifax lecture, Lewis highlighted the shortcomings of the G8's 2005 Glen Eagles commitments to HIV and AIDS. Although HIV had been one of the primary agenda items for the Glen Eagles summit, Lewis found it both astounding and appalling that the social aspects of transmission and prevention as dealt with in the commitments were moot. They failed to acknowledge the crucially distinct roles of men and women in the fight against HIV. However, even as Mr. Lewis spouts lecture upon lecture upon lecture, it is the big names such as yours that still fail to take heed. This year, Lewis would have been even less impressed. Not only were the gendered aspects of HIV left out in the ether, but further and even more problematically, this year HIV was effectively lumped in with malaria, tuberculosis, and avian flu under the umbrella heading of infectious diseases. With this conglomeration, all social aspects of HIV were negated. As far as the G8 was concerned, HIV was no different than contracting flu from a chicken. Of course, I am simplifying matters, but I think you see what I mean. I traveled as far as I ever have to report on you and your conference. I traveled as part of a research group which acknowledged its responsibility to provide equality to and recognize its male and female members. And I traveled hoping that the G8 would acknowledge that same responsibility. Please understand that I am not looking to place any blame on you. I think you're doing a great job for Germany. You stuck it out through the World Cup out there in the stands with the rest of them. Kudos to you for even having your own podcast now.
Liebe Mitbürgerinnen und Mitbürger, jetzt geht es los. Der Anstoß zur Fußball-Weltmeisterschaft steht unmittelbar bevor. Millionen haben auf diesen Augenblick gewartet. Nicht nur in Deutschland, sondern in der ganzen Welt.
As I've said, I've been following you for a while, and really, I am a fan. I know that you haven't particularly been pushing the Chancellorette card. You do your job, and you are a woman. Feminists in your country, such as Alice Schwarzer, have been criticizing you for not taking up the feminist cause. I'm not saying I expect you to begin writing a column for Ms. Magazine. All I'm saying is that a little dialogue can go a long way when it comes to the gender question in large international and paternalistic institutions such as the G8. You did not look happy when President Bush started goofily massaging your shoulders. I do not think he would have offered a back rub to Stephen Harper so readily. Further, when one reporter asked you during question period, glibly, whether you thought your husband would have enjoyed the inane activities planned for the leader's spouses, you put him in his place. Just because you are an Angela and not an Andrew, they don't get to ask you cutesy questions. All I'm asking is that next year, when you host your summit, that you take on some of that responsibility. The responsibility to respect, to reify, and to renegotiate the terms under which the G8 summit functions. Perhaps, if it were not so much a boys' club, that reporter wouldn't have felt so free to take a jab at your husband in the first place, and W would have kept his hands to himself. Anyhow, Angela, I want to thank you for your time. Thanks for being the podcasting chancellor that you are. And thanks for allowing the G8 gender dialogue to begin, albeit in the most humble terms, from a microphone at a college radio. Sincerely, Brianna Goldberg.